So maybe while I'm starting getting this sorted out, I could ask Kieran to talk to you a little bit about what this project is about and how we set it up and what is PAR.
Okay. So basically, PAR, it stands for Participatory Action Research. Traditional research basically dictates that there's, you know, a group of researchers and they want to find out information. So there's a divide between the researchers and the researched. With PAR, that divide is taken away, where the researchers are also part of the research and are at the same level as the researched. It tends to generally, what tends to happen is an action plan is come up with as opposed to just strict findings, and the researchers become very much more involved in the research than they would in a traditional non-PAR research methodology. In our research, we use FPAR, which is basically feminist participatory action research, so taking feminist learnings and ideologies and planting them into this methodology that we are applying to our research. We have a partnership with PSN, the Positive Space Network, and basically what that means is we give them updates and they help give us ideas into which direction our research should continue on. When Andrew, who is not here, Joanne and I, as well as a few other students who cannot continue in the course, started planning our participatory action research project last winter, we assumed that we would be discussing issues regarding space. Gendered washrooms have been a pretty hot topic around campus, as I'm sure you've seen, and we assumed that we would be hearing comments regarding the bleak necessity for these to be more easily accessible on campus. Our research project specifically explored the issue of safety and inclusion on campus and focused on, well, bathroom spaces. In this presentation, we wish to highlight some of our key findings around safety on campus, especially regarding the use of bathroom spaces.
Okay, and just to give you a history of where this issue came from, this participatory action research class is now in its about third iteration. And the very first class was a class that actually uncovered hate writings all over campus walls, and particularly in the library, and especially in the men's washroom in the basement of the library. So we've had a long history of working in a participatory action research way around what came to be called ambient violence, hate writing as a form of ambient violence. This particular time, turnaround, we decided that we would partner with the Positive Space Network. Now, the Positive Space Network is a team of individuals across campus who are interested in working towards positive and inclusive space for all people, but particularly for those who are gender marginalized, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's PSN has been in operation for about 2 years. When we started, both Kieran and Andrew are in the position of insider-outsider to these organizations. Insider-outsider in the sense that Andrew is a member of the executive and Kieran is a member of the Pride Collective, and both of them have been active in advocating for gender-inclusive spaces since they got to UVic. Myself, I've been involved in women's studies and in related areas around inclusion and equity and diversity. I'm one of the core organizers of this conference, for example, and I was on the original committee that dreamt up the idea, and so we've seen this in four iterations, so it's been really satisfying. Outsider, that's our insider position. We all know people who are involved and know what's going on and all of that, and everybody knows us. But we're also outsiders in the sense that in our research capacity, we're doing the work as researchers as opposed to activists. So we're constantly putting our hats off and on. So I just wanted to say that the we in this presentation is a complicated we. It's a mobile we. It's a fluid we. So just to let you know how that's working. So I thought what we could do is just show you maybe a 3-minute clip from the last research project, which produced a video called Tongues Untied. And in that video, we worked in partnership with the Applied Theater Department. And what the class did was the Applied Theater Department decided to do guerrilla theater around ambient violence. And then our PAR class documented the witnesses' reaction and held coffee workshops. And not only looked at bathroom writing, but also Islamic phobic comments written in the martlet and on posters and on walls around campus. So here's just that Tongues Untied clip that I was trying to set earlier. Now I won't just go away.
Is that the same clip that's on the blog for the diversity conference?
No.
Oh, okay.
This is another one. Enter full screen. Whoops. Hit play. Does that work? I think it's going to work.
Please work. I hate writing in men's public washrooms. Why was it men's washrooms? Most women don't have a clue because misogynist stuff is written about them by guys. And that our male friends look at this stuff every day.
Okay, you've got it
what
the wrong.
What do they think about it?
We don't find a single answer to that question because men are not a unified group. We are not all the same.
Most men on campus will recognize this bathroom. A lot of the guys interviewed identified it immediately when we asked them about ambient violence, but they wouldn't say what's written on the cubicle walls. I guess it's so repulsive, it's unspeakable. Nothing you'd repeat to anyone. Only the men who use this washroom see it, and that's part of the problem, part of the reason it's still there. I distance myself, trying to pretend that I'm not one of the people that is being attacked or threatened on the walls of the bathroom. Even though my skin is brown, I've absorbed enough whiteness and the privilege it brings, and I try to fit in. I don't want to give that power up. I distance myself from being perceived as other, from immigrants, from my parents, from my religion, from other minorities, from femininity, from homosexuality. This doubled consciousness of seeing myself through the eyes of the cubicle messengers, as other, as object, is internalized, turning the violence on myself. Yet, I fall into emulating white masculinity. I don't draw attention to the writing on the wall or warn the next guy who's going in. Instead, I pretend I don't see it. But the reality is, when I walk in there, I can't hide that I'm brown. And I understand that the writing on the wall is about me. I'm being told to go home to the country that my parents immigrated from, that I'm not safe or welcome here. Not welcome in the bathroom, not welcome at the university. If people think those things in the privacy of the bathroom stall, they think those things everywhere, on the bus next to me, in class, talking to me. You don't just wash your hands, walk out of the bathroom, and leave it behind. It seems symbolic that it keeps getting painted over with white paint, a blank canvas for violence. It just keeps coming back.
As someone who lives in between the gender binary system and who has therefore experienced both female and male public spaces, I can say that from my experience, men's washrooms are certainly a site of privilege. This privilege becomes translated into racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, Islamophobic, and otherwise offensive forms of graffiti, in which those who are different from the white hegemonic male symbol become target and subscribe to inferiority. Those who produce this graffiti are tending to maintain their power and privilege in a world that is becoming more and more challenging and critical of this exclusive stance. Just today, I heard of a friend who was questioned by another man at the urinal when my friend came out of the stall for peeing sitting down. Where does this violent potential of hegemonic masculinity come from? How often do we hear the saying, "You're not man enough"? What type of manhood are people who wish to defend being man enough aiming to assert? White hegemonic masculinity seems to be reinforcing exclusivity rather than inclusivity, and as such, we need to look at more serious ways of addressing white masculine privilege on our campus, in our community, and within society at large.
Okay. So that was that's just the clip that I wanted you to see, and that's how we in the first project entered into looking at bathroom spaces. In this project, we then went on to construct a... I think I need to go back one. Yeah. In this project, because of the interests of PSN and because of the interests of Kieran and Andrew, the research took a slightly different focus. And it was decided, especially in terms of the debate going on campus with respect to gender-neutral washrooms, it was decided that we would look at safe spaces. So the project turned to look at safety and non-safety, inclusion and exclusion. So that was the big question, and we decided that we would look specifically at bathroom use. So therefore we have this title, Relational Bathroom Culture. So we thought we'd ask you, what did you think when you saw the title? What did you think you were coming to?
Well, I work at the library. Yeah. And so I was familiar with like what was going on in the downstairs public male washrooms, and that's instantly what I thought of, is the negative graffiti that was on the wall. And so like seeing that was kind of unsettling, because I realized that it had an impact, but it's another thing to connect it with people. Like I heard the story, I knew that it was going on, but it's another thing to hear that. Like, what really got me was that people don't just wash their hands and leave it in the bathroom, that it comes out with them, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, okay, so you knew what it was about. What about you, Hilary?
I guess I thought it was related, like that it was related to the debate about gender-neutral washrooms. Like, we just voted to have it on the cover of the Bartlett. And I think it's an issue that's really, like, a lot of people on campus don't know what it's about, don't understand it. So I just saw that really saw it early.
Okay. What did you think?
I'm really sorry, but you know, I'm a volunteer that I was assigned to come here. So until now, I was not really sure what you are talking about. But I as a staff member, I don't really have the experience to see dogs. And I don't really use it, the washroom in other buildings. So it's kind of new to me, and I didn't aware of that. So this is probably good stuff for me to learn.
Okay. Well, thank you. Do you want to talk about the research questions and methods so that we used?
Sure.
Maybe something on the study.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, so last semester we had a very small focus group. We had four people in the focus group. We had two staff members and two students, three of whom I identified as white or Caucasian, and one who identified as Korean Canadian. Three used female pronouns, the other person went by any pronoun. We understand this is an incredibly small focus group, but since we haven't had a lot of time, we're basing our findings for the rest of our spiel on this one focus group that we had, so bear with us. We asked questions regarding space, mostly things like, where do you feel safe and non-safe on campus? And one of the things that we found that was really, really interesting was that Andrew is a geography student, and he was assuming that people would talk specifically about, you know, certain spaces on campus that felt more safe than others. What we found out, though, that although that is true to a certain extent, for the most part, they feel more safe about a space by the people who are in the space. So for example, I feel completely safe in the Pride office pretty much, you know, any day of the week. I'm really comfortable there. But if there's someone there who I'm not comfortable with, I'm going to try to avoid that space. It's not the office's fault that I feel uncomfortable, but it's the people in the space who will make me feel uncomfortable, if that makes sense.
Okay. So So I can take it from there.
Awesome.
So two key findings that we want to talk about: relational safety, the idea that safety is not a fixed entity, but it shifts and changes in relation to context and more often than not, the people that are around you. And it, again, it's not about physical space, it's about people. So participants really dispelled any assumptions that safe spaces were straightforward and easily created or identified. All participants agreed it's not the place, it's the people. Respondents told us that safety is a variable state that changes from feeling very safe to feeling very unsafe in relation to multiple and interconnected dimensions of conditions, tactics, strategies, interpersonal interactions, and personal lived histories and experiences. So the concept of relational safety seemed to capture what the respondents were telling us. And so I thought maybe what I could do is go through maybe six dimensions of the findings and share them with you, and then at the end ask you what does it mean to you, and maybe help us ask you to help us further our analysis, because we're just at the start. And participatory action research is a cycle of where you do research, you reflect, you learn, and then you take action, and then you start the whole cycle again. And all participants in the project are participants in the entire cycle of the research. So we're going to take this back, and we're going to go back and consult with PSN, their network, and we're going to do this again if we have time within the constraints of a course. So one of the things that happened was that although we learned that it wasn't about physical location, location did matter, but in a contextual way. So it mattered in terms of the presence or absence of people in specific locations, and how that and those people influenced safety and unsafety. But there wasn't any predictable way that that worked. One person said, "I feel safe anywhere around the campus most of the time. When I don't feel safe is when there is no one around, especially in the dark, late at night, because there's no one to help you if you are in a dangerous situation. So with people, I feel safe." And she says, "I think UVic is one of the safest campuses in Canada." Whereas another person said quite the opposite. She felt safer when she was alone. She writes, "For me, it's not the place, but rather the people. I know that you're both saying you feel safer when there's people around, or you feel fine interacting with people, but it's the opposite for me. Where if I'm alone, and when I'm in my colleague's office, I'm alone. When I'm walking through campus, if it's late at night, I'm alone. Things like that. I feel unsafe around people. When people are around, I have to put up a sort of guard or question or hesitancy." And the first quote, that individual had identified as heterosexual, and the second quote, that person identified as genderqueer. So again, the campus location in and of itself can't be said to be either safe or unsafe. It only appears as one or the other in relation to something else. So for the first person coming from an urban setting, UVic feels relatively safe. But yet another person that I actually didn't have a quote from basically also agreed that campus was safe because her background was in the back alleys and streets of Victoria, where she was a street person, living as a street person, and at one point in her life was a drug addict and basically lived a rough life. The next quote, if you want to talk about this one, Karen.
The campus location is perceived as safe in relation to other locations. For example, another person, D, their response to the question where on campus is unsafe was, I can't say the back of McKinnon is a very scary place, because that's where all the hooligans hang out. The statement actively contradicts the spatial nature of safety by saying there is no example of a place that is specifically unsafe on campus, a feeling confirmed by all of our respondents. Second, as an example of spatial unsafety, D's response quickly becomes an example of social unsafety. The reason the back of McKinnon is unsafe is because of hooligans. Thus, spatial safety may only actually exist due to spatial patterns of specific social groups who are perceived to occupy particular spaces. As we stated earlier, we had started out with the assumption that gender-designated washrooms were exclusionary for some individuals, and gender-neutral washrooms would be more inclusive. However, respondents quickly dispelled an assumption that more gender-neutral washrooms would solve the issue of safety. One respondent who identified as genderqueer had mapped the locations of all of the gender-neutral washrooms on campus. On the one hand, she took control over protecting herself by taking preemptive actions. Before she would visit a new building, she would first identify the locations of the gender-neutral washrooms. Each time she was confronted with marked single-gender washrooms, she had to make a gender decision. These conditions required a separate decision calculated on the presence or absence of other people before, during, or after her visit. For this, for her, the availability of gender-neutral washrooms minimized the number of times during a day when she was required to decide her gender to avoid possible confrontations. Having to make a gender decision as a potentially unsafe situation arises in regards to gender-segregated spaces such as washrooms, is still understood as coming from a larger social issue. Guaranteed, if there's anybody around, it's going to be a problem. The gender-segregated spaces simply create a more acceptable setting for someone's gender to be challenged. There still needs to be someone there to challenge it. On the other hand, another respondent who self-identified as transsexual stated, I will personally not use gender-neutral washrooms unless I have to, but I will. I figured that I put a lot into that fight. People don't like me using women's washrooms. Maybe it's a little bit worse than that, just so I guess. Yes, I recognize people use gender-neutral washrooms. I presumably will use women's washrooms. She further elaborated that her bathroom decision is a political act. I'd rather not go to gender-neutral washrooms. I want a gender binary. I have kind of a perspective about that. I fought for the right to use women's washrooms. I'm not particularly feminine looking, so I get these concerns, and I am pretty sure I still get funny looks. I simply don't care.
So in that little excerpt, these are both people who are gender variant, and their appearance out of place really triggers a feeling of unsafety. And I think that's a finding that we definitely want to pursue further, because the answer is not going to be simply opening up more gender neutral washrooms. It's a solution for only a small minority of people. It needs to be there. However, if you're transsexual and you still perform your gender identity and people perceive you as, say, male when you're actually transitioned and you identify as female and you go into the washroom and you're confronted with hostility, that makes it feel really unsafe. So it's something that we don't really think about, I think, those of us who are what we call cisgendered now. I don't know if you know the term cisgendered. So cisgendered
basically means that you are comfortable in the body in which you were born and that your sex and your gender line up. So for example, I identify as a cisgender lady because I was born in a girl body and I'm totally down with my girl body. Whereas someone who is, you know, trans or genderqueer feels at odds with the way that their sex and gender match up, therefore they are not cisgender. This word cisgender kind of came around as a way of, you know, if we're using trans for people who it doesn't match up with, in all terms of equality, cis is the scientific equal root to trans, and it kind of takes away the assumption that, you know, there's normal and then there's trans.
Okay, so carrying on that that theme further, we wanted to talk about, there's another aspect of locational safety that relates to one's personal lived history, that is one's previous experiences, and then that informs how safe and unsafe you feel. So in this quote, Dee talks about the numerous times she has had bad experiences at one location, and because of these negative and scary experiences, she will not use the washrooms there. The idea of going to, the idea of going to McKinnon and using the change rooms to go into the swimming pool terrifies me, because I've been accosted so many times in there in terms of, what are you doing in here, sort of thing. Whether it's a simple question, whether it's all the stairs, whether it's just somebody actually hauling you out, things like that, those kinds of spaces are scary. So locations do matter, but they matter in particular contexts. It's not just a blanket place to say, we've got to fix the change rooms at the McKinnon Gym. It really depends very much on who's using it and under what context. So we found that the respondents were not passive victims. Like, they just weren't just angry, they weren't just silent, but they all had strategies of managing this gender decision of bathroom use and negotiating potential unsafety in their bathroom use practices in a variety of different ways and under different contexts. So when Dee, who is genderqueer, for example, goes to the washroom, every time she goes to the washroom, she feels threatened, especially when she's wearing a men's jacket. Some of the practices that she engages in as to manage and stage her gender is that when she's with her partner, who is often mistaken for a guy, so there's a whole set of performances that they go through, having odd little tricks, like having little conversations as we go in there, like I'll call her female words or takes her hat off. So I participate in that with my partner to like make her look more feminine and stuff like that. So having conversations elsewhere, there's like an explicit one where she says, you know, I ask her, do you have a tampon? Do you have a tampon? Just to announce and let people know that this is not a guy going into a female, but a female going into a female. So all sorts of, because it's an everyday occurrence and it's continuous, they've developed all sorts of practices. Here's another one. Maybe you want to talk
about this. In addition to strategic gender performances, respondents identified many tactics and strategies to increase a sense of personal safety in terms of their everyday lives. If safety and unsafety are understood as extreme poles, the space in between can be seen as fluid and malleable. To enable greater degrees of movement across the borders of safety and unsafety, respondents reported numerous strategies ranging from searching out single-use and gender-neutral washrooms on campus, controlling the people in their immediate environment, advocacy and standing up for themselves, working collectively to make everyone's lives better and putting themselves up there, fighting for the right to be gender variant, shifting work assignments to remove oneself from individuals who don't get it, and taking risks and being scared out of my mind.
The other thing that we were told is that this is a relentless activity.
It never ends.
It never ends, and you know, one person said it absolutely wears her out. So, moving on to what can we do about it, and what would make a difference? When we asked them the question about inclusion and relational safety, actually, what they said was very straightforward. Just accept me for who I am. And treat me with respect. Don't show me that you feel awkward and uncomfortable. It makes me uncomfortable. So basically what they're saying is that there's something out there that has to shift. People actually have to change. So I think that's interesting. Another person said, I feel safest when there are a variety of different people around with different ideas who can discuss a variety of issues civilly and, you know, not make attacks. So again, that includes, that reaffirms our finding that it's about the people that you're with And changing the physical setting is going to help some people, but not everybody. And the problem doesn't reside with those who are gender variant. It resides with the larger culture and the community around us. Maybe you want to read further? This is emotional safety, another aspect.
Like, continue reading or go into my statement?
Well, maybe I'll do that one then, because...
Okay.
So... So although I said that there was this, there's this two-way street between how one feels and the culture around you, and what our society tends to do is blame the victim, there is what G talked about, the importance of her own feelings in all of this, her own sense of who she was. So she says, I was in denial of being transsexual. I never, ever was true to who I am. I didn't want to know who I was. I ran away from who I was. Today, I know who this is. It's like, no, I am not going back there. Please, let me do my business. I would like to change if I could, but I can't. You know, I take a very neutral stand. I am not going to back down. She's talking here about taking a neutral stand on gender-neutral washrooms. I'm not going to back down. And backed down by her, she's referring to her insistence on her right to use the woman's washroom. If I back down, then I go back to who I was, and that would be awful for me to begin. Yeah, it's hard, emotional, and yeah, but for me, it's going back to safe spaces. You know, just treat me as a normal person, not special stuff, though I like special stuff. Just treat me like anyone else. Okay, so, Andrew's statement, shall we?
Sure, read Andrew's statement.
Okay. So this is Andrew speaking. Andrew's statement. So he says, what does this mean for our understanding of the positive space network on campus? The positive space network also seems to be an inherently spatial entity, but simply putting up signs across campus is not what makes the positive space network useful. A positive space resource person is an explicitly safe member of the pre-existing social networks on campus. The function of the sign is simply to make this person more visible, thus making an invisible social network visible. So here I think he's talking about a campaign that the Positive Space Network has of training volunteers, right?
Yep.
And doing postering, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Around campus and letting people know that this place is a gender safe space.
And you can get training, and like for example in the different advocacy groups in the student union building, we have trained resource people that have gone through the PSN training program. It's basically I think an afternoon course in which you just talk about what makes things a positive space.
So he closes by saying, to understand why some spaces are safer than others, we must look to understanding the social networks that occupy these spaces for the roots of unsafety.
An example of this can be seen with the coverage of the UVSS board's decision to establish two gender-neutral washrooms within the student union building. Although some people are very excited about the arrival of these new facilities, other people have vocally expressed their feelings against the decision through the student newspaper and other mediums. One of our subjects remarked that they didn't want to be treated as an exception to the majority of the population. They wanted to be treated exactly the same as everyone else. This feeling can be summed up as inclusivity. Everyone should feel like they belong on campus. The slogans on the CFS posters around the sub state that education is not a privilege, it is a right. It is very difficult for one to fully meet their potential as a student if they feel threatened around campus because of their gender presentation. One of the arguments presented by students on campus around this decision is that women view their washrooms as a place of safety against men, and to open up a gender-neutral washroom would jeopardize their safety. By having an open discussion about how people view the washroom across campus, the campus community, as well as the people they encounter in said washrooms across campus, perhaps this issue can be addressed and be adapted as well. Overall, I would want to see everyone on campus feel comfortable in the washrooms, minority groups and majority groups alike. A phenomenon I have seen in several spaces has been the further marginalization by minority groups from within their own organizations. Continuing on with the example of the gender-neutral washrooms, too often have I been in attendance in queer events run by queer people with queer people in attendance, and properly organized gender-neutral washrooms have fallen by the wayside. One instance, I was told after the fact by a student in attendance at such an event that they had recently come to terms with their genderqueer identity and was looking forward to the event as a place in which to come out in a supportive atmosphere, only to find that they had to make a gender decision regarding the washrooms. This is not an individual research group decision. This is a campus-wide concern that needs to be pushed forward for further dialogue if any major changes are going to truly occur. Although spaces can be changed to fit a specific purpose, such as the gendered washrooms, what takes longer to change is the feelings and attitudes of those using the spaces on a day-to-day basis. It is my belief that although we can make decisions towards making specific spaces safer, it would also be a valuable use of our time to work on educating the greater university community on these issues. In the case of the gendered washrooms, it is likely that many of the people arguing against their existence have spent relatively little time hearing about the relevant issues regarding gendered washrooms and how people might feel unhappy or unsafe using them. Regardless, it makes no sense to get mad at those who detract from issues such as these until we gain a better understanding of the issues.
Thank you. So that's our presentation. We thought we'd now open it up to ask you, what did you think? How does this story relate to your life? And what actions would you like to see coming out of this? So what did you think?
I really like that idea. The idea about, I think in the conversation that's going on campus right now about gender washrooms, there is a very large assumption that anyone who does identify as genderqueer supports this decision and would want to use a gender neutral washroom, and that really checked that assumption for me, and I think it's important for a lot of people to know that. And what else was I going to say?
Well, can I just jump off there for a second? Because like that was interesting for me also. But I mean, you guys had feedback in your focus group, it sounds like, or not even in your focus group, but from the UVSS boards and the sub, that some people who identified as gender neutral didn't want to use the gender neutral washrooms because it singled them out. Is that right?
No. What it was is that the use of the gender neutral washroom is not a neutral act. In the case of a transsexual person, she fought for the right to use the women's washroom. And so for her, the use of a gender-neutral washroom is a cop-out.
Okay, I see.
And going backwards.
It's great for, basically her view is, it's great for other people, just not something she would personally use for that reason.
Right, and then creating that space might give the rest of the community the impression that as a transsexual she would be choosing that washroom, and so
what is she doing
what
here?
Is she doing the other one? Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's also interesting, you were mentioning like the reasons people on campus are resisting this decision is women commonly think of the women's washroom as a place of safety from men, and that's kind of been one of the debates. Not necessarily phrased like that, but the idea of like, well, where will we go when we need to like talk about girl things or do girl things? And that's been like, I think considering like that safety within that space is like a really important thing to do as well. And actually, I have a question, which is kind of ridiculous that I don't know this by this stage in the game, but for general neutral washrooms, like I know the ones in the Biblio Cafe, they're single stall.
Yeah.
Gender neutral. Are they the only accessible ones on campus, like wheelchair accessible?
Funny you should ask about that. We have, if you go on the UVic Pride website, which you can get by going on the sub website, I'm sure, you know. One of our coordinators and one of our really involved volunteers over the winter put together an interactive map that has all of the gender neutral washrooms on it, and they have labeled which ones are like how easy it is to access them, if they're wheelchair accessible, etc. So there's already existing wheelchair accessible washrooms on campus that are not labeled with a gender, but that's one of the reasons why there's such a push for gender neutral washrooms in the sub anyway. Is because, for example, one of my friends is transitioning from female to male, and he will use the single stall gender neutral washer, but he feels very uncomfortable using it because someone who actually has a disability might need to use it and it bleeds in there. And then there's, you know, the whole discourse about transitioning is not the same as having a disability. So why am I using a disabled washroom sort of deal?
Also, are the ones in the sub, are they looking to implement like a single stall one, or is it,
well, what
like,
I,
is there a discourse?
What I've heard two different things. And I didn't go to the board meetings on this, but I did go to the Pride meetings about this. Originally, what I heard is that they were going to switch the signs in Vertigo to be gender neutral, and that they were going to either install urinals in what is currently a female washroom, or just, you know, add additional stalls sort of deal. Like, not a huge renovation project, but a little bit of a renovation project sort of deal. Now, and the reason that was chosen is because they're, you know, very easily accessible to the Student Union building, but they're not the major ones as well, because as well we have a very high, you know, international population, and they didn't want to, you know, take down the whole cow right away sort of deal. However, I've also heard a few people throwing around the fact that they might switch the main washers in the sub across from the health food bar into being gender neutral, but I've yet to see anything actually confirming it. As far as I know, it's just the ones in Vertigo.
Do you guys have, like, when they do switch it, do you guys have, like, a prediction for how people will react to that?
Honestly, from my own personal perspective, I think it could go either way sort of deal. I mean, I was recently at a conference in Toronto, and I was in a building where they only had gender neutral washrooms. And I was not in the washroom when this happened, but two other delegates were like washing their hands before dinner sort of deal, and the guy came in and he was just like, oh, you're in here, I'll just wait until you're done. And the people go, no sir, it's a gender neutral washroom, seriously, feel free to come in, it's no big deal. And he was sincerely confused by the concept of a gender neutral washroom. And the thing that worries me as an activist in this community, with a lot of people who are very personally invested in having gender neutral washrooms, is that yay, we've got the legislation, yay, we're getting the washrooms, but I'm afraid that too few people actually know why we're getting them and the issues surrounding them. They don't really have a personal interest in it sort of deal. Hopefully they work out well. Like, that's again kind of why I was hoping we'd do Vertigo right away instead of taking down the whole hong and putting them straight up in the Student Union in across from the health food bar, because that way, you know, it can ease people into it. I don't necessarily want every single washroom on campus gender neutral just because of all the different cultures and lived experiences people have either. But I am hoping this goes over smoothly, just because I do know so many people who desperately want these washrooms.
Yeah.
Getting back to that question about the response of women saying that it's a, we need women-only spaces because it's only women that, we need these spaces for women to do whatever they want to do. Kieran and I had a really interesting conversation, and we said, in what way is this argument parallel to black segregation? Black and white segregation, where blacks were refused service at lunch counters, white lunch counters, for fear of contamination, and so they were kept separate. And the rationale was that white women had to be protected from black, generally black males, but also contact with black females. And so, to what extent are heterosexual women, most of whom are white on this campus, being used as an excuse to prevent greater gender inclusion? And I think that's a question that needs to be debated among the community. Also, is really the women that need protection, are they mainly heterosexual women? If we opened up the notion of what constitutes women to female masculinity, right?
Yeah.
And so, feminized males, we might actually have this gray space in this middle, where people could use whichever washroom they feel most comfortable in without having to make what they call the gender decision, which really is a, it's a form of terror, really, everyday terror. What do you think about that?
My question is, I see what you're saying, and then coming from the other side, I mean, I, as a guy, if I was in a washroom, I would be slightly uncomfortable if someone that I viewed as a woman came into my, into the male washroom, because they identified as a male. Like, I would understand, I would be a little uncomfortable, just being, like, totally honest in this forum. But for a woman, a cisgendered woman, in a female washroom, if someone came in and looked like a man, a transsexual who identified gender-wise as a woman, is that a safety concern for the cisgendered woman? Does she feel, I don't have an understanding here. I mean, I'm sincerely asking it, totally.
It's totally cool.
Do you know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Because what's to protect them from someone coming in who is a man? I guess that's kind of a specific situation.
Well, one of the things that I was saying to Taran last night when we were having this discussion is, for all of the talk about how, men do bad things to women in washrooms, at the same time, there's also women doing bad things to women in washrooms. And...
Like
we're not
bullying?
Really, pardon?
Like bullying?
Also sexual assault.
Oh, okay.
There is, unfortunately enough, girl-on-girl sexual assault that does occur, as well as bullying, etc. Like, it's not that, girls are necessarily safe from other girls in the washroom either, but we're not discussing that specific discourse ever. It's more of keeping people out. And I understand how people are uncomfortable in multiple situations, partially. One of the reasons why I personally don't want every single washroom on campus gender neutral for that specific reason.
Right.
But I do think that, yeah, there is...
There's challenges there, aren't there?
Yeah, I think one of the things is that we should look at why and how is the gender binary regulated and what else is going on there. So. I think the statistics indicate that actually most rapes are not done by strangers in these bathroom places, but they're done by family members, people that you know, family and friends, in intimate spaces like the home.
It's very rarely, in a public campus setting. Like, it happens, and it gets a lot of press because it does happen, but by far and large, it is not how these horrible incidents are happening.
Yeah, and when those incidents do get the press, then I guess they feed the fear, don't they?
Yeah. So, maybe what we should ask more questions about around heterosexual privileges and what they do, what gets done to keep that privilege in place. Maybe we should pose the question in a different way. Yeah.
I also think this discomfort that I think, it will occur, if we're honest, people will be uncomfortable with a lot of these situations, but I think this discomfort is really tied to what you were saying about how you're worried that people aren't going to know the reasons why we're implementing these washrooms. Like, if we create more understanding about that and people have more of a realization about this, daily lived fear of having to make gender decisions, the discomfort will go down with education, really, which is the case in so many
situations. But I've been, honestly, not that I was already passionate about this topic before, but the gender neutral washroom that I encountered in this conference was actually in Toronto in a United Way community center. And this is in a portion of town where, not that I was, checking people at the door or anything, but from the programs that are happening there, there's a lot of people who are HIV positive coming into the center, into this building, and there's a lot of people who are genderqueer or trans or, multiple nationalities. And from the questions I was asking, there had never been a major problem regarding using the gender-neutral washrooms, given it's all, a United Way building. So I think, you kind of go there with the expectation that you're going to be inclusive of everybody. But But when I came back here, what I was honestly comparing is, I'm going, what is it about the UVic campus in which people are, you know, almost taking the opposite approach to this and are almost, from what I see, in fear of the concept of a gender-neutral washroom? It's not like the urinal is going to eat.
Yeah. I found this website that I thought I'd show you. This is the UVic campus.
This is the map.
This is the Pride map, and it's interactive. So if it's a building that has a gender-neutral washroom in it, if supposedly, is this a PDF? Oh, there it is. Yeah. It turns into pink if you click on it. So you know, but it doesn't tell you where it is, does it?
No, it does. Look inside. Like, no, corner, sub, gender neutral washrooms.
Oh, A16B208. Yeah, there you go. So in Clearhue, D119.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it tells you where the gender neutral, so there's none in universities, and it's pretty good. So for all those people who are gender variant and who do feel threatened every time they go to use the washroom, this is a tool that they can use to map.
Do you know if they mentioned this in the Martlet article? I don't believe they did.
That article's been floating around Pride for a while since we're on the cover, but I've yet to hear any mention of this in the popular media. It'd be awesome if it did.
So I know Kaylee wrote it, and she seems to be aware.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. I'm like, really, Kaylee? Really? You didn't mention the awesome map?
Yeah, it is a great map. So do you have any other questions or comments to share with us? Like, what would you like to see us do with this research?
I guess for me, just the really important thing in this debate is having people know why, and I think that clears up so much for people. Like, I think a large reason why people are uncomfortable with this is lack of education, and that not knowing of, like, I know there's a huge fear with, like, genderqueer and trans issues of not even, like, not knowing the right pronoun to use and, like, not knowing how to properly address or ask about that. And I think just, like, having an open sense of discussion and debate is really important.
I think it's really interesting that what another dimension that we uncovered was the range of comfort that gender variant people have with putting themselves out there. I mean, as one person said, who's quite a leader on campus, she says it scares the pants off her, like putting herself out there, but she's got to do it. And that's how she's coping with the fear, is that she takes action. And so I think it's really important to, and the other person, Dee, whose response was, I'm a hermit. Her response is just to avoid people. So she lives a very constrained life because her way of dealing with it is to separate herself out and remove herself from people because she finds people threatening. So both of them are talking about how they managed to cope with the issues. Both strategies are not really positive strategies in the sense that they come from a place of fear, and to take action, any action, also puts them at risk. So I think it's really important for cisgendered and straight people to hear that, so that they don't just simply rest on the privilege that they have of living within a system that is set up for them.
That works for them.
Yeah. I think that was really enlightening for me.
Yeah.
Because I basically thought, great, PSN, Pride, yay, keep up the good work. Because I have heterosexual privilege. But in fact, it's just, for them, it's the same kind of work that I do in anti-racism and anti-oppression work. Every time I step out of my box, I'm a moving target. People don't want to hear what I have to say about these issues. So again, it's kind of broadening our alliances and coalition work that we have to step forward. So that's something I learned personally.
But I agree that outreach, I mean, what you're saying, like, I didn't know any of this. I didn't even really know too much about the gender neutral washroom thing that was going on campus. I heard little glimmers. But just, knowing why is important.
So what do you think, Jerry? class is going to be over soon.
Yeah.
I hope, poor Kieran and Andrew, I don't think knew what they were getting into.
At the beginning of the year, there were 8 people in the class. Right now, I'm the only person here.
Everybody else got sick.
And dropped out, or was sick and couldn't come.
And I'm sick. What does that tell you? Maybe this research is exhausting. Yeah, no, so weird.
I just wonder, is this the first time to talk about this issue in public? Or, because as you said, you know, he said, I was not aware of this issue, and it was the first time to hear about the gender neutral bathroom.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, this is the first step, or you have been already talked about this in public before?
Well, the history of the Gender Neutral Washroom Project. The first time it got brought up in the student union building was, I believe, about 11 years ago, long before I got here, but there was a first round of it and then nothing happened. Then the year before I got here, so it would have been the 2006-2007 school year, there was another push within the student union building and nothing happened. This time, what happened, more or less, is we've been talking about it in Pride, but we hadn't actually put any, you know, physical anything towards it. Basically, one of the board reps, Jen, wrote up a proposal and then submitted it to the board, and it was voted, all but one person supported it. We are now going to have them. But, like, Pride has been working towards them, towards having these for more or less 11 years. We just didn't actually, weirdly enough, do a whole lot this time. We, 2 people made up this map. It was up before Christmas, I believe. It's been a priority, but like we haven't been running around picketing for it either.
I guess, like, how do you feel that ally work does come into play with this discussion? Because quite often I feel like this discussion, maybe it does stay quite a bit within the Women's Studies Department, within Pride.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't think it was a great step that it was on the cover of the Bartlett, but again, I haven't heard too much discussion with that. Like, how, like, I don't know how Pride is working with that. Or
for me, I actually identify as an ally in this situation. I joke that my passion for this project pretty much fell in my lap, in that 2 of the people I have dated ended up coming out as genderqueer as I was dating them, and then one of my best friends started transitioning, and then it was a case of, well, I really care about these people, they deserve equal rights, let us push for equal rights. So I'm queer, but I identify as an ally in this particular situation, and that I use gender neutral washrooms in solidarity. I think that it is a human rights issue, so therefore allies should be encouraged to come and, you know, support this, you know, write positive letters to the Bartlett, use the washrooms if you feel so comfortable, sort of deal. It's like, I don't know, like, if I'm trying to come up with, you know, comparison, like, it's pretty much the same. It's like, if you've got straight people marching in a pride parade, by all means, support the issues outside of Pride Week. It's really not that difficult, and we do need the support, because, I mean, the way that a friend of mine who's in poli sci put it with the gay marriage vote, it's something like 10% of the population is gay or identifies as, you know, non-heterosexual. So then if you break that down, there's only about 4% of those people who are actually voting. So it's more or less allies that voted to get non-heterosexual people the right to vote in Canada. The yesterday, Bill C-389 got passed off to the senators. Basically, it's allowing gender variant people and people who are transitioning to have the same rights under the Criminal Code and the Human Rights Act as anyone else, like, you know, gender identity, sexual orientation, ethnicity, income level, etc. And I can honestly tell you, probably the grand majority of the people in the House of Commons are not ever going to need that right personally, but they voted for it anyway. So, please do.
Yeah, like, I know I'm definitely in support, and I just feel like there's a, like, so with my roommates, I have a roommate in psychology and a roommate in biology, and I brought this discussion to them, and they didn't like support or not support it, they just had no idea about it.
Yeah.
And I feel like there is a very strong lack of awareness, or there's, I feel like a lot of the support for it, which I'm kind of conflicted about this, is almost because it's a novelty. Like a friend of mine, which is like a male heterosexual friend of mine, was just like, oh cool, we can have gender neutral washrooms and we can pee together, that'll be great. And it was just like, it was a novelty, but a lack of understanding of like why this is a political and necessary movement.
And I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of the problems I have with the popularity of the so-called ally discourse that's going around now. Everybody is an ally, or everybody wants to be an ally. And the alternative discourse, which I am more in favor of, is to see yourself co-implicated in all of these marginalizations. Figure out how you are part of the system that keeps it in place. Then you are invested in the system of oppression. And that is a very different place by thinking you're removed from it and that you're helping somebody else out, which is what the ally position implies, that you're not the victim, and therefore it's still not that far to me from the Lady Bountiful and the Miss Charity person, you know, who goes out to help the poor unfortunate souls but never interrogates their own privilege. Or another variant of that, it comes from a place of guilt, which is not a place of love. So for me, if the other way to think about it is that two people in our focus groups are staff, that means that they're probably working with you too. They could be your colleague. So when you think about that, it could be somebody that you work with, that you care about, and they're going through this and you don't know it. And then wouldn't you feel awful if that you knew that they were every day facing this fear and sense of lack of safety? Wouldn't you want to do something about it? So when you see it that way, and that you could do something about it, I think it's a very different investment in taking action. And then you want to learn the language, you want to hear the stories, because it matters to you. And I think that's a far more ethical place of action to come from. So I have this whole thing about the ally discourse that I it just pisses me off. And I've been at this for a long time, but sorry, you've just given me a platform to go on about it.
It's like being positive in it. I mean, my mom likes to think she's an ally because she took me to a pride parade when I was 17, but really...
Or the parents, like, but I know gay people.
Pretty much. And I'm like,
thanks, Mom.
That's really lovely, Mom. I'm glad you know gay people. Now, awesome. Like, the thing is, though, on the other hand, like, I'm political, but I don't believe that every single thing one does has to be super, super political either. Like, in this case, I'm not doing this because it's a political act. I'm doing it because I care about people. Have politics got involved? Yes. But it's not like I woke up one morning and went, I am going to start researching this because it is a super, super political act and I want to be a super, super political person. No.
I think that's really good attitude because it's more inclusive with those people who don't consider themselves.
Like, I have gotten into arguments with people in, not necessarily Vic Pride, but in queer communities at large for not being more political in their eyes, because I don't wake up in the morning and go, okay, I'm going to put on my super liberal skirt and I'm going to cut my hair in this specific way because it supports a certain group of people, and I'm going to only buy shoes from this one place because it's super political. Like, you have to have boundaries, and you can't always be super political all the time, or else you are going to wear yourself out and it will suck.
So on that note, I think we've run out of time. Thank you for coming and being a participant in our discussion, and I hope you got something out of the presentation.
It was really lovely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.